Recorded Books and RB Digital present History of Wolves by Emily Friedland, narrated by Susan Bennett. Science. Chapter 1. It's not that I never think about Paul. He comes to me occasionally before I'm fully awake, though I almost never remember what he said, or what I did or didn't do to him. In my mind, the kid just plops down into my lap. Boom. That's how I know it's him. There's no interest in me, no hesitation. We're sitting in the nature center on a late afternoon like any other, and his body moves automatically toward mine. Not out of love or respect, but simply because he hasn't yet learned the etiquette of minding where his body stops and another begins. He's 4. He's got an owl puzzle to do. Don't talk to him. I don't. Outside the window, an avalanche of poplar fluff floats by, silent and weightless as air. The sunlight shifts. The puzzle cleaves into an owl and comes apart again. I prod Paul to standing. Time to go. It's time. But in the second before we rise, before he whines out his protest and asks to stay a little longer, he leans back against my chest, yawning, and my throat cinches closed. Because it's strange, you know? It's marvelous. And sad, too. How good it can feel to have your body taken for granted. Before Paul, I'd known just one person who'd gone from living to dead. He was Mr. Adler, my 8th grade history teacher. He wore brown corduroy suits and white tennis shoes, and though his subject was America, he preferred to talk about czars. He once showed us a photograph of Russia's last emperor, and that's how I think of him now, black-bearded, tassel-shouldered. Though, in fact, Mr. Adler was always clean-shaven and plodding. I was in English class when his 4th period student burst in saying Mr. Adler had fallen. We crowded across the hall, and there he lay, face down on the floor, eyes closed, blue lips suctioning the carpet. "Does he have epilepsy?" someone asked. "Does he have pills?" We were all repulsed. The Boy Scouts argued over proper CPR techniques, while the gifted and talented kids reviewed his symptoms in hysterical whispers. I had to force myself to go to him. I crouched down and took Mr. Adler's dry meat hand. It was early November. He was darkening the carpet with drool, gasping in air between longer and longer intervals, and I remember a distant bonfire scent. Someone was burning garbage in plastic bags. Some janitor getting rid of leaves and pumpkin rinds before the first big snow. When the paramedics finally loaded Mr. Adler's body onto a stretcher, the Boy Scouts trailed behind like puppies, hoping for an assignment. They wanted a door to open, something heavy to lift. In the hallway, girls stood sniffling in clumps. A few teachers held their palms to their chests, uncertain what to say or do next. "That a Doors song?" one of the paramedics asked. He'd stayed behind to pass out packets of saltines to light-headed students. I shrugged. I must have been humming out loud. He gave me orange Gatorade in a Dixie cup, saying, as if I were the one he'd come to save, as if his duty were to root out sickness in whatever living thing he could find. "Drink slow now. Do it in sips." The walleye capital of the world, we were called back then. There was a sign to this effect out on Route 10, and a mural of 3 mohawked fish on the side of the diner. Those guys were always waving a finny hello, grins and eyebrows, teeth and gums. But no one came from out of town to fish, or do much at all, once the big lakes froze up in November. We didn't have the resort in those days, only a seedy motel. Downtown went diner, hardware, bait and tackle, Bank.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?